As the Which Insurance Brand of the Year, you can be sure you're doing the right thing choosing LV. Our award-winning car, home and multi-car insurance is made for how you live today. And with our EV cover, you'll be ready for the next generation too. With our exclusive multi-product discounts, no wonder our customers rate us as great value for money. Get a quote today. Go direct to lv.com. 9 out of 10 customers rated LV as value for money on Revo February 2022.
Deezer Originals.
Now, it's time for Strong and Stable.
Strong and Stable, 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 Strong and Stable.
Hello, I'm Dom Jolly, and welcome to Strong and Stable, the podcast that's around for as long as there's a general election happening. So, see you next month, and the month after that, and probably the month after that. Due to a full cabinet reshuffle, not a half-assed non-shuffle that drags in Michael Gove, we have a brand new array of guests this week. And they are journalist, author, TV presenter, and person most likely to be the next leader of the Lib Dems if Lembit Opik doesn't run. It's bound to be her turn soon. Rachel Johnson. Applause.
Woo.
Well done. A comedian and novelist who, as a Chelsea fan, can no doubt sympathise with Theresa May's current predicament of being hugely unpopular despite actually winning, David Baddiel.
I've applauded myself.
Well done. And journalist, writer and broadcaster Hugo Rifkind, whose novel Overexposure was described as an arch laugh-out-loud thriller, much like the general election itself. Welcome. So, guests, let's crack on. I mean, it's been a slow week. There's
Where's
been not much
applause?
Going on.
Hey? Where's my applause?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Dom just carried on talking.
I'm really sorry.
Can I say, I'm going to interrupt Dom straight away
and
say I was told very clearly that Michael Gove would be on this podcast, and I want to know why he isn't.
I was not told that I was coming on effectively as Michael Gove, almost worse.
I just thought you had been told that you were standing in for Michael Gove, so it's quite awkward in the warm-up when I said, thank you for standing in for Michael Gove. You firstly said, you do know I'm not a Tory, which was, we understand that.
Good.
Your dad's a Tory, though, so it's all...
So far...
Yeah, but it kind of, there's a link there, roughly. Basically.
Vaguely, I guess. Yeah, okay. I mean, my mum's a zoologist, and I'm not
so
really
we've got
a zoologist
both.
Either.
So there we go.
Yeah.
So Michael Gove doesn't turn up, weirdly, because he's suddenly been flung back into government.
No, but it's very interesting, Dom. I'm opening it up as an interesting thing, because presumably I haven't listened to the Strong and Stable podcast. That's my fault. That's my bad, as the young people say. But it is the case, presumably, that there's free-flowing political conversation of all sorts on the Strong and Stable podcast. Then what happens over the weekend is Michael Gove gets a call saying you're back in the cabinet, at which point his first thought is, shit, I can't do the Strong and Stable podcast, because I'm no longer able to just say what I like about Theresa May.
Much as I love the Strong and Stable podcast, and it has a huge reach, it's been an incredible hit.
Yeah.
There is a moment when you're Michael Gove on Monday thinking, I am unbelievably back in the cabinet.
Yeah.
Oh, I've got to do the Strong and Stable podcast with, I thought it was David Schneider, but actually it's Dom Jolly. Yeah. I would imagine you have certain on the first days back in cabinet. You've probably got to prioritise, haven't you?
I think he probably...
You think he got the
call?
Are you saying
Theresa
he bottled
May,
it?
I'm saying that when he got the call from Theresa May, or whoever it was, who said, come in... His first thought was, oh no, I'm not sure I can be Environment Secretary because I've got on Tuesday, I've got to go and do the Strong and Stable
what
podcast.
He should have said is, I can and I'm happy to be back in the cabinet, but I can start Wednesday after Tuesday. Ironically, this morning, and I felt very old this morning, as some of us possibly often do, because he was on BBC Breakfast and someone said to him, how do you, you know, were you surprised when you were called back? And he literally said, for a moment, I thought it was Dom Jolly on Trigger Happy TV. Now, A, I've never done prank phone calls, so he was linking to my big mobile.
Yeah.
B, immediately, even I was thinking, bloody hell, that ages you a little bit on a cultural level.
By the way, nobody told me Michael Gove was coming on.
It was a honey trap.
Did you tell Michael Gove that Rachel was coming
on? Yeah, exactly.
Yes, we did, and he was very keen.
Was he?
Yes, he was really keen.
Well, he's already been talking about having a role in the hay with my brother.
Yes,
so
I know.
Maybe he's...
But you
know,
had a chance. We met
the
last.
The sap is rising, isn't
The only
it,
time you, I and Michael Gove have been in the same place was at the end of the Cheltenham Literature Festival.
Yeah, when it's true.
You were hanging like a wallflower. I was drunk in the corner and Gove was dancing like a fiend.
Then
but that
I
was
danced
the night,
with him.
Wasn't that the night he left his child alone in a hotel till 3 in the morning?
Alone, was that David Cameron?
Alone
that?
In
no,
Gove.
He left his child in a pub.
David Cameron forgot his child.
The Tories, they are the leaving child party, aren't they? Or any types of leaving of child.
Every child left behind. Yeah. That's their slogan. Yeah.
Strong and stable.
After her snap election backfired more spectacularly than a car containing Richard Hammond, Theresa May is trying to convince us that no majority is better than a bad majority. And the country is on tenterhooks to see when she'll announce a snap resignation. Emily Thornberry has said that Theresa May is squatting in Downing Street, presumably because she's shitting herself, while George Osborne called her a dead woman walking, which I think is another way of saying she's the ghost of Margaret Thatcher. So, guests, has it been sorted? Has Nick, Timothy and Fiona Hill been booted out? Is it all going to be okay now? Is Theresa all right? Is she safe?
They won't get rid of her because they'd probably have to have an election and no one else wants the job. Everyone's going to wait for her to fail, probably.
But hasn't she already failed?
Fail more. Fail harder. You know, I mean, the Tories really, really, really don't want an election. And so as long as they don't do anything at all for the next 5 years, it's all going to be okay.
But is there a possibility that she's thinking, okay, it's bad now, but if I just don't do anything as bad as that for the next few years, they'll have forgotten about it, and then I'll go down as one of the great prime ministers in history.
She can't get anything through Parliament.
Yeah.
But that's it, really. She can't get anything through Parliament. She can't do anything that annoys either half of her party or anyone
else. DUP.
Yes, so she's just got to do something. She's just got to do completely inoffensive stuff for the next 5 years
negotiating Brexit.
What I loved was she apologised to the 1922 committee by saying, I'm sorry I got you into this mess, and I'm the person to get you out of it, which seems...
At least her software had been updated by that stage.
She'd been rebooted.
On Friday, it was the old program, and she hadn't. Yeah. You know, they hadn't downloaded her properly, and so she was still on the last iteration.
But that is
of
quite
iPhone.
Weird. I do think that is weird about her. I mean, the whole thing with Theresa May, obviously, what's gone wrong with her is that she was a politician who no one really knew what she was. I mean, and the truth is, most people in this country only know two politicians anyway. They certainly don't know who the Home Secretary is. Suddenly, the Home Secretary has to come out of that and be the Prime Minister, and then you discover she's someone who's absolutely uncomfortable in her own skin, doesn't know how to perform on television, and thinks the best thing to do is parrot some lines that Linton Crosby has given her to say over and over again. So, and what's really weird about that is that when she loses an election and she has an opportunity at least to appear vulnerable, which is the starting point of winning back the affection of the country, and contrite and like a human being, and say, I can say things like, yes, I realise I need to listen more to the electorate, or whatever you say. She can parrot that if she likes. Parrot some different stuff. But she didn't.
So how did she get there? Because, I mean, we all kind of, supposedly, she was thought of as this incredibly strong Home Secretary. But why was she thought of that? And I think she got there because actually she didn't have allies. She's not clubbable, is she? So she had no allies. So she got in there because she wasn't, Boris wasn't, lots of other people.
She was no faction, so she had no allies and she had no particular enemies. Or the only sort of close to enemies she really had were David Cameron and George Osborne. You know, I mean, people forget, but at the last Tory conference, and remarkably people forget this obscure thing that happened at the last Tory conference before Brexit, her speech was just so counter to the narrative the Tories were putting out. The Tories were being all kind of one nation, we are the progressive party, we have taken the centre, and she was there making a speech about sending people home in the back of anti-immigration vans and stuff. And it was just so different. And it looked like somebody who was just completely out of step with the narrative of the times. And so because she was, they put her in after Brexit.
But that is all part of what you wrote a piece, Hugo, this morning in the Times about the way that Jeremy Corbyn has sort of humanised himself in order to become electable, which is true. But that's, I don't wish to be over-structuralist about this, but that has to be seen in relation to Theresa May becoming less human.
Yeah,
so I think the reason why Jeremy Corbyn, and I was watching him thinking, bloody hell, what's happened to Jeremy Corbyn? He's like an ordinary politician, like sort of Tony Blair or whatever. He's someone who's wearing an ordinary nice suit.
He smiled.
And smiling, and also pretty good on his feet, which he really wasn't, and just able to come across as an authentic human being. And that was all heightened by the fact you're thinking that's exactly what she isn't.
Rachel?
I mean, I'm not sure that her recent effort to start speaking human, which she did only, let's face it, to the backbench committee. She hasn't yet apologised to us.
No.
How about 56 million of us who had to go through the, you know, goat fuck of the rolling goat fuck of the last 7 weeks.
I'm afraid we have a limit on goat fuck.
Okay.
Only one allowed.
I think she actually tried to resign on Friday night.
Of course.
And in floods of tears.
Well, but she said it so boringly no one understood what she was saying.
She was going to do a Cameron, you know, nothing was as graceful as his departure and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
She was stopped from doing so by, you know, the Graham Bradys, the backbench, the hard Brexiters in cabinet, who need her to stay in Downing Street, like the Victorians used to prop up a corpse in their best clothes
while they get everything
in
ready,
a death daguerreotype, while she stays there like that, kind of with her makeup on. until, you know, she delivers the Brexit.
This is the political weekend at Bernie's, isn't it? Where you keep someone alive. Just so you can get everything done.
That episode of Fawlty Towers, where they're hiding the corpse.
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a long tradition.
And meanwhile, the Europeans, our former, or still current, 27 European partners are laughing at us all the way to the Berlaymont, basically thinking we're turning into Fawlty Towers, but minus Manuel, because we're not going to have any waiters, any nurses, anybody.
Manuel will be sent back, definitely.
Because that hotel
Brexit.
Would fall apart without Manuel. Yeah. I mean, he was the core of it.
Yeah, his Saxgate was just the start of his problems, really.
You're listening to Strong and Stable.
And now it's time for a moment of quiet reflection from Theresa May. Which surprised us, as the rumour is she doesn't have a reflection. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, the Prime Minister.
If you can take a 20-point advantage and a Labour Party torn apart by trots, then balls the whole thing up so absolutely, the only thing that saves you is the Scots. If you can have the right-wing press behind you, blackening your foes with endless hate, and yet you go from U-turn to disaster, perhaps you should have gone to that debate. If you repeat your strong and stable catchphrase till everyone would ram it down your throat, if you can make a Cyberman sound chummy and people give Lord Buckethead their vote, if you can't handle Provo-friendly Corbyn and Farron claiming gay sex is a sin and Nuttall with his burqa-burning buddies, I'm sorry, but you don't deserve to win. If you can take your core support for granted by starving them of cash for winter fuel, if you can snatch away a kid's free meal and slash the funding to their school, if you can make a deal with mad extremists and claim that nothing's changed for anyone, yours is number 10 till Boris takes it. And which is more, you're Theresa May, my son.
Thank you, Jan Ravens, I mean Theresa May, for that stirring version of Rudyard Kipling's If. Presumably next week it will be I wandered lonely as a cloud through fields of wheat. Following the election, Theresa May has announced a reshuffle that includes Damian Green as First Secretary of State, Michael Gove as Environment Secretary, and the DUP is the racist cousin you're obliged to invite to your wedding. Yes, left without a majority, the Prime Minister is now desperately trying to scrabble together a deal with the ultra-right Democratic Unionist Party. And these DUP negotiations have even led to the Queen's speech being delayed. That's right, there's a Queen's speech impediment. I thank you. thank you, very pleased with that. Thank you.
Very good.
What do we think of the DUP deal, though?
I've never really heard of the DUP. I know I should know more about politics to be on a podcast, but until someone sent me on Twitter, I think I read it in The Guardian, what they believe in, I thought, I didn't actually know there was a party essentially in power in Northern Ireland that was anti-gay sex, anti the idea that climate change is real, and anti, what's this?
Anti-abortion,
mate. Anti-abortion, yes, anti-abortion.
Which is the only woman in the room.
Is completely mad because I believe their main thing is we're not Catholics.
That's right.
Isn't that their main thing? So why don't they get all pro-abortion? Because that will piss off the Catholics.
But they're also very pro-Brexit.
I might be being simplistic.
They're very pro-Brexit, but want a very open border with Ireland. I mean, the whole thing is so complicated.
My favourite line about them is basically the Bible. That's the manifesto with fortnightly bin collections.
Where do you stand on the DUP?
I'm not a fan, but they're basically just that UKIP bit of politics that, because of the weird history of Northern Ireland and the weird factionalism of Northern Ireland, is incredibly strong. They evolved out of Ian Paisley's party and then sort of got a bit more moderate, although in a very sort of, we're talking about a short step. Take you a very long way. But I mean, the Tories have been like effectively in coalition with the DUP forever. They're forever propping them up. They're forever relying on them.
But they never mention it.
They never mention it. Exactly.
The Conservative and Unionist Party. Yeah. We are the Conservative and Unionist Party. Never been mentioned before.
They got right the way through the Maastricht negotiations on sort of relying on the DUP. So it's not new that they're there lurking in the background. They always have been.
I read that one of their major figures, when talking about discussions at Stormont, said that gay marriage was a red line they would not cross. Now, the last time I heard that phrase, it was Barack Obama talking about chemical weapons. Right? But apparently gay marriage is
a red
line.
But he didn't go through with it.
What?
Obama.
No, I know that. No, he screwed that up. But that aside, the idea of a red line, which is, you know, just sort of metaphorically, sounds like the worst thing possible. The line... For them, it's gay marriage. One of their MPs has said that is the red line that we will never cross, which is kind of extraordinary.
So now we move to the other complication, which is Ruth Davidson, who probably is the most popular Tory in the country.
Yeah, she is.
Who is a lesbian in Scotland. And obviously,
I think she's lesbian wherever she goes.
Okay, but at the moment, she's currently lesbianing in Scotland. And obviously, for her, the idea of an alliance with the DUP is highly offensive.
Yes,
so
but
discuss.
Firstly, she's not an MP. She's an MSP. She's a member of the Scottish Parliament. It's certainly possible, certainly according to what she's always said in the past. Ruth Davidson doesn't want to be Prime Minister. She wants to be First Minister of Scotland.
She is going to want to be Prime Minister. Come on.
Well, I don't know. I mean, so far, it's like a shit job. I have to say, who wants that job?
It's strong and stable.
And now we're on to the Labour Party. It's safe to say that many Labour moderates have been forced to eat humble pie this week, specifically organic vegan humble pie from Waitrose, and admit that Jeremy Corbyn isn't that bad, really. In fact, things have gone so well that it looks like there won't be a leadership contest for at least, I don't know, a week. Labour's 40% vote share is thought partly to have come from a newly energised youth vote, with polling stations reporting floods of young voters turning up in the mid-afternoon looking for somewhere to charge their iPhones. So, guys, back to Michael Gove, was he right? We don't trust experts anymore. Everyone got it wrong.
Corbyn.
I'm not an expert, as I think I've proved on this podcast, but I had a very strong sense that everyone saying that they were going to do badly was wrong in the last week before the election. I don't know whatever the polls said. It was obvious, I think, that A, he had changed and done really well on the TV and all the stuff about the debates. And he just seemed like a competent, really attractive politician. But also, it was really obvious from social media that the young vote was being mobilised. And actually, if we could talk about social media for a minute, I think if you want to know where the old guard of pollsters and pundits get it wrong, it's because they don't really understand social media. And the key element of social media is it mobilises very quickly. So this idea that, like, if you've got a 20% lead, history shows you can never have that overturned very quickly, that's bollocks now. Swings of opinion can happen very quickly, and stuff that seems fringe can suddenly get a very wide support, because where in the past those would be very disparate voices, they cohere. And once they've cohered, they attract other people. And suddenly you've got a huge swell of support and other people saying, come, come, come. And that come, come, come is heard now. Come and vote and all the rest of it. And you could feel that happening.
Rachel, you wrote a great article about your kids voting.
Well, I had two of my children, the males of the litter, voted Tory. But my daughter, who's 22, voted for Corbyn. You know, people on Tinder were saying swipe right, and then they were saying, have you voted? I looked at Facebook, and, you know, you could put these red roses on your profile. And then there was this extraordinary meme or GIF or whatever you call it that gussied up Corbyn to look like David Beckham.
That's right.
In his pants. Seriously hot.
It was hot. I was aroused.
I think what we saw was, it was about expectation management. You know, Theresa May started with everybody assuming the cult of personality. Everyone would fall in love with her. Everyone fell out of love with her. Mm. Then started seeing a bit more of Jeremy Corbyn. And, you know, social media was going wild. He was having these rallies. What were his nicknames? The absolute boy, you know, things like that. He kind of somehow connected with the youth vote.
This is the problem with the shock and trauma of Brexit on the pundit classes, right? Because I knew perfectly well that everyone I knew was voting Labour. You know, I barely know anyone who wasn't voting Labour.
Yeah.
You kind of think, well, I live in a bubble. That's got nothing to do with anything.
Mm-hmm. It's a big bubble.
Just because everyone I know is voting Labour doesn't, because most
Did
people
you vote
in Britain,
Labour?
No. But no, I voted Lib Dem.
He voted for you.
It's immensely confusing because lots of people did vote Labour despite Jeremy Corbyn. However, well, after an election, they all go in the same column. They all become a ringing endorsement of
him.
It doesn't make any difference. I don't know.
From my point of view, I voted Labour. I have always voted Labour. I used to vote Labour because Glenda Jackson was my MP, and I once heard her on the radio saying that the high point of her career, she's won two Oscars, was the Morecambe and Wise show. And I decided in that moment that I would always vote for her. But then Tulip Siddiqui, who is now my MP, seemed fine to me. But also, I'm someone who has been conflicted about Corbyn, partly because of the people around him, because Corbyn himself does seem to be, in his own way, reasonably nice for someone who is a Marxist.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure about John McDonnell, who I think is a dyed-in-the-wool trot, and Seamus Mill is a Stalinist. He's a Stalinist. And there are quite a few people around that caucus who do seem to be completely proper Joseph Stalin. He wasn't so bad, and he really was.
I know, you've got to hand it to Jezza for having united the Labour Party, and you know, around a Stalinist Benite trot.
You've named all the people that people don't actually like. But do you think Diane Abbott took too much of the flack? Everyone was naming, well, even for like Corbyn, I couldn't have Diane Abbott. How much of a problem was that?
Well, I don't know. I think in the end that backfired as well, because I thought Diane Abbott screwed up on a couple of interviews, although in the same, like a really wrong thing, this was an interesting moment, was when that thing happened on Woman's Hour, even though there was then, as ever, a bit of an anti-Semitic backlash against Emma Barnett, but I was listening to that and I thought, I hate this, when a politician can't remember a figure, like a human being, can't remember a figure and has to look it up on their iPad, and the journalist starts saying, oh, you're looking up on your iPad, that means you're rubbish and can't. Yeah. No, it doesn't.
Whereas journalists know everything. I've got everything in my head.
That's what people do with figures.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's completely straightforward.
I think people were really sympathetic when he couldn't remember.
Yeah, I agree.
I can't remember what I did 5 minutes ago.
The problem with a lot of this, though, is this is what people think if they're on Twitter, if they caught up with Emma Barnett's interview on Woman's Hour, if they saw the Facebook meme, if they saw all that. That's a vanishingly small proportion of the electorate. That's not really how people voted. People voted for Labour where they voted Labour. And remember, Labour didn't win, but people voted Labour when they voted Labour because they didn't like the Tories, they didn't like austerity, they thought Theresa May was rubbish because they vaguely saw her on the news.
But those people that read it is the bubble. And so does the bubble exist? Does it matter? That is a bubble. I mean, everyone that read that is in that sort of journalistic bubble.
The bubble is no longer print. I think we can absolutely...
So is it a bubble.com?
There are many bubbles.
Well, but the print, but I think the print, but I think the print bubble doesn't quite realise yet how it is not the important bubble
anymore. It's not big bubble anymore.
Do
you think Paul Dacre looks at all those copies of his paper the day before the election, the 13 pages attacking the Troika of Evil, and thinks... Oh, that really helped, didn't it?
Well, I don't get that. I mean, who's that for?
Yeah, I agree. Because they're preaching to the converted anyway.
That's for all the Daily Mail readers.
But did you see again on Twitter on the morning, everyone buying up all the copies of the Sun and the Mail, burning them? And you think,
well, that does have an. I think that does have an impact. I think.
Do you think
for young people? I think young people,
because it's
will
a physical
respond to the idea that here's our hero, here's our savior, being attacked by the forces of evil, and he becomes more of a hero because the mail have piled on this.
But isn't that book burning essentially?
Yes,
no.
but there is
no. I don't think it's book.
No,
no. I think burning the mail.
Burning
it's not
the mail,
it's not a book. Okay, it's paper burning. I get that.
And also, it's slightly below paper.
it's sort of book burning. But I mean, there's a
novella burning.
There is a big constituency of Jeremy Corbyn's sort of most passionate support, the Momentum support.
Yeah.
For whom, I mean, the enemy isn't the Tories. They're not interested in the Tories. They're barely even aware of the Tories.
No,
the enemy is the media. The enemy is the Daily Mail. The enemy is the Sun. They're the people they're fighting about.
That's the other enemy.
And the Blairites. Yeah. But it's all happening in
the Blairites.
Half.
Who are the
Blairites.
I'm not even clear that they even exist anymore.
There's no way of knowing how people vote, why they vote. A vote is a binary thing. There is no way of knowing how many people voted Labour thinking Labour would lose, and how many people wouldn't have voted Labour if they thought there was a chance that Corbyn would be Prime Minister.
Why would you vote Labour and think they lose?
You might, because you want to express your support to a party that's going to be devastated anyway. Oh, look, I know loads of people who...
Like Brexit, in a way.
Yeah, sure.
You vote Brexit as a protest.
Loads of people who wanted to give their support to what they regarded as moderate anti-Corbyn Labour MPs, or just the party generally, because they thought it was going to get a drubbing. I've got one friend who said to me... lots of people said, I'm voting Labour, but not for Corbyn. And I've got one friend who said to me, I'm voting Labour, but not for Corbyn, although I do live in Islington North, so I am literally...
Strong... And stable.
And now it's time to go over to our roving reporter, Jonathan Pye, whose already strong faith in the British public has in no way been rattled by the result of this election. Isn't that right, Jonathan?
Thanks, Dom. I'm out on the streets in... where is it? I don't know, but it's a shithole. Where are we again? OK, all right, let's go again. And I'm asking shoppers for their thoughts on Theresa May's election disaster. Hi, could you answer a... Excuse me, could you answer a couple of... Yeah, fuck you then, buddy. Twat. See, they don't want to talk about it, do they? Strong and stable. We didn't buy it from the start. When was the last time we had a strong and stable government? Oddly, it was when the Lib Dems were involved. Since then, the Tories have twice gone to the country and didn't get the result they wanted. They've been found out. The public have found her out. How does a UK government systematically and repeatedly act in their own self-interest rather than that of the country? Oh, hang on a minute. Let me get my dictionary out. Here, under politics, it says a bunch of selfish twats who act in their own self-interest rather than that of the country. To be fair, Boris has said he'll stand behind Theresa May. It sounds selfless, but I imagine he means in much the same way as Brutus stood behind Julius Caesar. Anyway, this isn't about my opinion. They voted for her because she says she'll stand up for Britain, just not when the president is making ill-informed remarks about our elected officials, or when selling arms to Saudi Arabia, or doing deals with the Qatar. You know, those countries with links to ISIS. And they've been shit, the Tories. Continually being blocked by the Lords, continually being challenged in the courts. They deny decent debate over Brexit. There is nothing strong or stable about them, and there hasn't been for a while. Fucking vox pops. The graveyard shift for any failed reporter. Look at this place. Jesus. It looks like the sort of place where Lord Buckethead would actually win. They had two choices in this constituency, Tory or Lib Dem. I mean, what a choice. Farron looks limp. He looks like he doesn't have a skeleton, or at least he's missing the spine. He should have borrowed Nick Clegg's because he won't be needing it anymore. This is my worst nightmare, interacting with the general public. It's the one thing I have in common with Theresa May. Right, fuck this. They don't want to talk to me. I don't want to talk to them. Let's get a pasty from Greg's and get the fuck out of Dodge.
Strong and stable.
Now, Theresa May still insists she's the right person to lead us into Brexit negotiations. And given Number 10's success at negotiating a larger majority with the public, negotiating support within the cabinet, and announcing they had a deal with the DUP when they didn't, I'm sure we've got nothing to worry about. Rachel,
yeah.
What does the election result mean for Brexit? Tell us all.
Well, I mean, I said earlier, 80% of the electorate voted for parties that have said they will enact Brexit. But don't forget, Labour was a Remain party going into,
so in the, last
into the referendum. So actually, to say, well, the way people say, you know, the country still, the election doesn't change the referendum result, doesn't take into account the fact that Labour, even though Corbyn obviously voted Brexit, Labour was for Remain. And I think that, you know, anybody with a brain has got to see that Brexit is an unparalleled act of economic self-harm. And honestly, I can barely think about anything else at the moment, because I just think, I imagine people like my brother or Michael Gove or even Theresa May, what do they actually think when they're lying in the dark?
Well, I've got to ask you. It's your brother.
Have you asked him?
I'm sorry.
Don't ask your brother what he thinks about lying
your brother,
in the dark.
Your brother, bloody led
him. There's loads of things he
when it comes to Christmas and you're all pissed and they've all stopped laughing about the Lib Dems, will you promise me to ask Boris?
He just says, I don't understand how evil Europe is, how it's an unaccountable bureaucracy.
So he does definitely believe
in it. By the way, nobody says unaccountable bureaucrats about our own civil service, do they?
No.
So it's always Brussels bureaucrats, as if they're some evil kind of...
But genuinely, you know, there are a lot of people that feel Boris did it as a sort of a stance. No, but he genuinely believes in Brexit.
He genuinely believes in Brexit. And
really?
I genuinely
still?
Believe he's wrong. And that's where
we course.
Are.
And he still believes in Brexit.
Of course he does.
Absolutely 100%.
And also, he's also converted Theresa May into a fervent Brexiteer, as far as I can see.
Well, he's converted.
And then he's thrilled, I presume. I haven't spoken to him. Gove coming back in.
You're not speaking.
Do they have meetings?
Do they have meetings? Who's they?
You know, the Brexiteers, where they try and bring new converts
in. I thought you meant the Johnsons.
The party is meeting the Johnson party.
So how do you...
Well, you are saying, you know, we do believe in Johnsons, but... Yeah.
So Johnsons are thicker than Brexit, basically.
Blood is thicker than water.
It's going to be fine. There is no way they can get a hard Brexit through the Commons. They can't get anything through the Commons.
So what is a soft Brexit, then?
A soft Brexit is basically remaining in the European Economic Area, perhaps remaining in the Customs Union. Perhaps we'll do it in some sort of transitional way that goes, this is what we're establishing now, and once we figure out actually what we want to do, we'll do that at some later date.
Which accepts,
in 50
by the
years.
Way, Hugo, some jurisdiction of the European Court of Justice.
Yes.
And I suppose the Tories must agree that a bit of ECJ is better than a lot of Corbyn.
Look, they can keep banging away, banging
cracking
on
slogan.
About, they can keep banging on about precisely how they're going to do Brexit forever, getting nowhere. They can get completely beaten up by the Europeans, trash the economy, not be able to do anything, or they can just accept some sort of existing situation that's being handed on a plate, which is a sort of soft Norway-style Brexit, and they'll go, you know what, let's bank that one, talk about other things and keep working on this.
Is there
I reckon
any,
that's what they'll do.
Is there any way in which there could be no Brexit?
Or is that complete? There is going
to
be some.
I think it would
Brexit.
Be politically very difficult for them to actually say it's not happening anymore, and there would have to be another referendum. Or whatever. Oh, by the way, if there was another referendum, I'm pretty sure the country would now vote against it. The point about Brexit, which is not, I think, an original point, but is what it actually is. I was on a bloody thing, the agenda, that ITV programme, with Nigel Farage about 2.5 years ago, and I said to him at that point, this was a mistake. I was wrong about this. Yeah. I said to him, Nigel, why are you banging on about Europe? Europe's such a dull subject. It's always the bit in on Question Time where I turn off Europe.
It's really like the world music on Jules Holland.
Yes, and what I didn't realise was what Nigel was what Nigel was able to do, really single-handedly, although Boris was part of it, was make a very dull issue actually to do with trade treaties that no one has read into a question of national identity.
Yeah.
And it's not a question of
national identity. He made it bulldog, didn't he?
He made it about British identity, and he made it an emotional issue rather than a very, very dull reading the Maastricht Treaty issue. And that's what a lot of people got behind.
But also, I think it's interesting, I mean, where I live in the Cotswolds, which is white and whiter, it's either British bulldog types or it's the ultra posh that voted Brexit. It's the two extremes went for it. And it is a kind of intellectual elite that almost feel we kind of like the fact that we're rocking the boat in a way. Do you think that's what your brother's doing?
Politicians shouldn't be negotiating Brexit at all. As David says, it's detailed trade stuff. It's going to be going through.
But that's the boring stuff, isn't it?
4 million documents line by line.
But that's the problem. They've all gone for the big, like, swishy move, and then they've buggered off.
But they do need to decide what they actually want. I mean, you know. The problem with getting anybody else to negotiate Brexit is we don't know what
Nobody will be bothered, honestly.
Yeah, but
honestly.
there's like 2,000 regulations about milk, for example, right? That's one product that's being traded across Europe. There's like 2,000 regulations about. To actually decouple us, whatever the Gwyneth Paltrow thing is, in a kind
consciously uncoupling
from
my
the,
pint of milk. I leave that with my milkman every
millions
morning.
Millions and millions of other regulations about all the other products. Yeah. We'll just take an awful lot of finickety nonsense that will take up all our civil service time and money and blah, blah, blah. So that's the problem, because that's got nothing to do with bulldog.
Guys, we are running out of time. I'm sorry, we could go on forever. I've got a couple of things to finish off. One is a quick fire round, if you could just answer. David, Lord Heseltine or Lord Buckethead?
Lord Buckethead.
No question.
No, no question. I love Buckethead.
Rachel, Philip Hammond or Richard Hammond?
Philip Hammond.
Really?
Ooh, that's
controversial. I'm with you.
I've got a slight soft spot for a spreadsheet.
Have you?
Phil, yeah.
Hugo, Queen's Speech or James and the Giant Peach?
James and the Giant Peach.
Okay, and finally, finish this sentence. David, the next leader of the Conservative Party will be?
Rachel Johnson.
Rachel, the next leader of UKIP will be?
It's this new bloke.
Boris Johnson.
Boris Johnson. Well, just intellectually. Hugo, the next general election will be held?
Tomorrow.
You think?
No, 6 weeks.
6 weeks.
No, actually, I don't think that at all. I think it'll be another one.
And before we go, we'd like to say thank you to everyone who's left us a review on Twitter or wherever you download your podcasts from. Thank you. It makes a massive difference to our chart position, egos, and chance of getting recommissioned. So please log on and leave a review. The funnier and more complimentary, the better. I'd particularly like to thank a man called Dan who writes, despite the involvement of Dom Jolly, I'm quite enjoying the Strong and Stable podcast. Thank you, Dan, my brother. There. Not an overwhelmingly positive review, but there are plenty of people who haven't slagged me off. So if you're one of them, we'd love to hear from you. And that's it. You've been listening to Strong and Stable, produced by That Lot for Deezer. Please join us next week, by which time I'm sure nothing much will have changed, except that we'll be pulling out of Brexit, three new prime ministers will have come and gone, and Great Britain will be known as Northern Ireland East. In the meantime, please tell, text, tweet all your friends about us, especially the young ones, as we hear they're the ones most likely to make an effort. Very special thanks to our guests, David Baddiel, Rachel Johnson, Hugo Rifkind, Michael Gove, who didn't turn up, to Jan Ravens, and Jonathan Pye. And to writers Andrea Mann, Robin Flavel, I don't know, Dan Bowman, James Martin. Until next week, goodbye.
That was Strong and Stable. We'll catch you next time. Please subscribe.
Strong and Stable is a Deezer Originals production. You can find and download more episodes on Deezer and all major podcast providers.
Deezer. Originals.